Christmas Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Hello and welcome to the Christmas Market Musings. As we approach Christmas, we are pleased to welcome back Alan Green on the Market Musings podcast with me and Kenny. So hi Alan, I know we speak every week, but welcome onto the more casual podcast. How are you doing?
Hello Mark, hello Kenny, and in special celebration I'm wearing some reindeer antlers.
Ah, are you? Well, you know, we had Darren Hazelwood on the other day on the Market Musings, and he had a Christmas hat on. So it's great that you've got your antlers on. Yeah, maybe we should get pictures. Or maybe not. Maybe it's not a good idea. But that's really good. I'll have to make sure that I put something on for the next one then, because our guests are beating us to it. Well, are you, Kenny? I suppose you've not got anything on, have you?
No, my Christmas spirit is not... I'm a bit of a handbug, basically. Nah, I don't really... I can't be bored with it. I know it's good for the kids and all that, but as soon as it's over, I'm like, yeah, can we get a tree down yet? Can we get it down? Can we get it down? So, I don't know. It doesn't feel like Christmas this year. I don't know.
Well it's a strange one, isn't it?
I think with all of the tier two and the movement restrictions, it's rather strange having houses completely decorated. And we've got a fine Christmas tree this year. There's a farm shop near to us. We get a tree from the farm shop every year, and Annie, my wife, has done a terrific job this year of decorating it. And I've come in for some slating because I chose the Christmas tree from there last year, and they've never ever let me forget it, because our Christmas tree had some big chunks taken out the middle. It just kind of looked rather odd. But this year we're absolutely prepped for it. But of course, no one's coming.
No one's coming. No, you'll have to take a picture, Alan, and put it up on Twitter so we can all admire your tree.
I will do that, and I'll put a picture up on the Twitter of the reindeer antlers and also and also the tree, or perhaps just the tree, actually.
Yeah. Oh no, that's good. That's good. I mean, it is going to be a strange one, isn't it? I think people are going to have fairly quiet ones, but fair enough. If it's only once in everyone's lifetime, hopefully, then I suppose we can live with that, can't we?
Yeah, well, the way Christmas falls this year as well, the markets are not really shut that much, to be honest. I think they're shut on the Friday, Monday one week, and the Friday next week, the following week. I think that's it. It's only a 3-day shutdown.
Yeah, that's right. But I think, we may see some more activity than usual in between Christmas and New Year, because, of course, people aren't seeing family. So, and I know in previous years, when you're talking to people, on social media, Christmas Day, Boxing Day, and then you see messages, God, I'm sick and tired of Christmas, sick and tired of the family, can't wait for the markets to reopen.
What's the bet that Paul Johnson's going to release some news in the interim between Christmas and New Year?
Oh, without a doubt. What a year it's been for Power Metal, though. I mean, goodness me. I think the most recent warrant exercise took the total cash raised from warrant exercises since August up to 1.2 million. That was announced earlier in the week. So, that's really some going. And fully justified given the raft of projects they've got underway at the moment. It's it really is quite astonishing. But that genuinely is a 24/7 job, isn't it? It's literally around the clock because it's in, four or five different time zones, and there's stuff happening all the time.
Yeah. I think it's a good example of if the warrant model is exercised correctly, it does reap rewards. And obviously, shareholders who have put their faith in them are rewarded, because obviously they can exercise their warrants. So, it should be interesting going forward, because there's still quite a few warrants out there in existence. So plenty more cash coming in, but they're certainly in a great position. And obviously, we're going to talk about it anyway, but the gold price, it's a dip to about $1,800, but now it's kissing $1,900 again. So and Bitcoin's flying. So it's almost commodities, copper's flying, nickel's flying. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a Santa rally for commodities and crypto, but it's not really hit the stocks. I don't think the stocks are still a bit flat at the moment. I think there's no volume.
Well, yeah, we were talking about this. I was talking about this with Jonathan Roy yesterday, and we were just saying that you've got all these different factors. You've got, on the one hand, you've got the absolutely desperate situation in the high street. The traditional high street retailers, as we know it, are disappearing thick and fast. You've got Debenhams gone, you've got Arcadia gone, and as we know, come the first few weeks in January, we have all the Christmas trading statements from the retailers. There are going to be some more casualties then, without a doubt. And we're seeing food shoppers, of course, doing very well. Grocery stores doing very well, of course. The online retailers doing very well. So that will continue. But try and imagine the high street, a couple of years down the road. I think we're going to see high streets full of lots of little artisan businesses and local stores and local companies.
It'll be charity shops, mobile phone shops, and card shops. That's all you see. That's all you seem to see in high streets now. It's just
and betting shops.
My local town, there was a William Hill right next door to one of the busiest pubs, and that's gone. They shut it. Yeah. So they did. I can't remember the last time I went into a Brookies. It's years and years. You can just do everything on your phone now. So,
There are so many good platforms out there. Why would you? You can literally sit down for 10 minutes and have a sandwich at lunch and place a raft of bets through a very efficient platform. So if you're into betting, there's no need. I think it's just the older folks that like to get out, because it's a social thing as well, isn't it? You go meet your mates down there and you all lose money together. But that's on its way out too. So it's going to be candle shops and perhaps the old off license too.
Mark might laugh, but I'm old enough to remember the Bookies Runner. So I would go down my local bowling club, and there would be a guy there, and basically he never had to pay for any of his drink, and all he done was run up and down from the bowling club to the Bookies and put everybody's bets on. That's what he'd done, and it was pissed by the end of it, obviously, but it was a free day for him. But I'm showing my age. I'm sure you probably remember that as well, Alan, if you're into betting.
I'm not really. I think like everyone I'd have a bet on the National, and I used to bet on tennis because it's a binary outcome. So I think I think one year I bet on, I was betting on the Federer to win Wimbledon, which was fairly predictable, and of course the odds were very narrow. So followed it all the way through, and it came to that final. It was the year with the Nadal Federer final, and I think that the final set went to 17 or 18 games.
Oh yeah, I remember that one.
Nadal picked him literally. So, but that was great. So, and I mean, tennis, I have made money from betting on, but to be honest, it doesn't really float my boat. I'm much more into stocks and that's really where my interest lies. So,
I made a whole career out of betting, but that's a story for another day. So it is. But talking about betting, what's the surefire bets then for next year? What sector you think is going to be hot, Alan?
I think it will continue as it is. If you look at what COVID is costing the global economy, we're now seeing second strains down here in the south. We've got a new strain of COVID virus that there will be a vaccine for, no doubt, but this virus is going to continue mutating, and it's with us now. That's it. It's here with us. So we've got the same problems. Governments are having to spend money to restrict, keep people at home, and that will just result in a dilution in fiat currency. I think to date we've got a bill of some $30 trillion. Some $30 trillion globally governments have had to sort of foot the bill for in dealing with COVID. That's obviously going to rise exponentially, and it's going to effectively devalue fiat currency. So of course, commodities and not just the precious metals, but particularly precious metals like gold and silver, that's the way forward. So I think all these predictions that gold at $5,500 a troy ounce may not seem so fanciful given that backdrop. which isn't going to end anytime soon. That, you know, they're not just going to switch it off. It's, this will continue for years to come. So, you know, my bet is we've had a, I think the junior mining companies have had an incredibly strong run this year, but I think we're only at the start of this recovery in the junior mining sector. The mining sector, the junior miners have been in the doldrums for, well, really up to the start of this year. And it's only been the rise in precious metal prices that's driven or reignited interest. Obviously, we've got technology stocks, we've got gaming as well, activities that people can undertake at home. So that includes, you know, streaming TV. It includes, we talked about Myriad, of course, Mark, the company that inserts dynamic content into streaming programming. So you and I could watch a programs and on the kitchen counter in the drama, you'd see, say, a crate of Corona beer. You'd see a crate of Corona beer. I might see a crate of Fuller's London Pride or whatever. That's really clever. And given that, you know, we're all recording box sets now, we're all winding through and skipping the ads, I think that's really clever use of technology. And also advertisers are looking for better value because they're just not getting the value now. Now people are just winding through the ads. So they're in front of the ways. And then of course we come to gaming. You've got the gaming industry, I think, is gonna be worth
esports. Esports is massive.
It's absolutely huge. But of course, Bidstack yesterday, this is the company that inserts just as Myriad insert the platform or the dynamic content into streaming programming, Bidstack insert the dynamic advertising content into gaming. It's taken, them a few, 18 months to get to where they are now. But the advertisers that were testing it are now moving to full spend, so that it's on plan and they're on course to exceed expectations for the year, which they've actually done what they set out to do, and this could be huge. They're first to market with this. There are other players, but certainly Bidstack, I think, are the leader of this. So we've got technology companies, and then of course my focus for 2021 is going to be the junior mining companies and the companies with really good gold projects and really good polymetallic projects around the world. And of course, we've got.
On the mining stocks. I mean, I've been investing since 2013. Got into mining stocks very early on. Clearly, early years didn't do too well. And I've been reading and hearing all the time the sort of the same message that, yes, it's in the doldrums, but it's cyclical, and it'll come back, and we'll see a huge run in the mining, in the exploration and precious metal space. And it does seem to be actually happening now. What do you think on it, we are overdue it, aren't we? And is it just going to be exaggerated by all this money printing as well? I mean, are we in for an epic run, do you think?
I do believe that, Mark. I really think that we're in a situation now where we've got this virus, movement is restricted, and once the vaccine's out there, that's great. It will lift some of the restrictions, but of course it will mutate ongoing. There's still the legacy bill from the whole process. When there are unusual events, and history tells us that if there are unusual events in the market or unprecedented events as such, then investors always flee to safe haven assets like gold, like silver, and so on. But also there'll be a rebuilding process after this too. The delay, if you like, in the emerging economies developing will recommence. And of course, there'll be that huge requirement for raw materials, iron ore, commodities. And then of course, the minerals that drive the electric technology, that's both in vehicles and in battery. We're going to see gigafactories spring up all over the world. So there'll be demand for graphite, there'll be demand for lithium, copper, and all of those other core constituent metals that make up the modern day battery.
And so do you think then that the mining space in general is going to see a huge upcycle, not just let's say in precious metals, i.e. gold, silver, or is it platinum? Is it? Yeah, that's the other one, isn't it? Was it
platinum? Yeah.
You think everything, so you can almost generalize across the mining space, including iron ore, you know, and copper for obviously construction.
Yeah, I think that'll be the case. But also, most mining companies, if they have a project, then it's prospective for not just nickel or not just zinc, but also there'll be elements of gold in there too. So if then there'll be companies that are exclusively engaged in gold, but they just happen to find the prospect they're working on is also prospective for nickel and other other raw commodities. So I think that space will continue to flourish. I think we are going to see a sustained recovery. Of course, it won't go up in a straight line. You know, it will ebb and flow as these cycles always do. I remember seeing Paul Johnson actually presenting at an event probably about 18 months ago, and he just said, you know, he was astonished that everything. The performance of the mining stocks and the commodities has been on the floor for as long as it has, and he was expecting a recovery. And, you know, there were prophetic words indeed, although I don't think any of us could have envisaged the manner in which the recovery came about.
No, and I mean, what's the best performing stock in that space this year? It's got to be GGP, hasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And GGP, I think, is an amazing discovery, of course. Yeah. You know, one of the geologists that worked for ECR Minerals some time ago discovered the Havieron prospect, and of course that was a classic. That was a classic coming together. GGP engaged with Newcrest Mining, and they now own 30% of an asset that's got 4.2 million ounces. But GGP now have a valuation of 1.2 million.
Yeah, but it's interesting, obviously, Gervais is leaving, I think it's in March.
Yeah, he is, isn't he? Yeah.
Interesting to see where he goes, if he's just going to cash in, and he's got to have it's more than several million. His shares have got to be worth probably, I don't know, 10, 15 million pounds. I wonder if he's just going to sail off into the sunset, or I wonder if he's still got the hunger and desire to.
Whichever one he goes to, if he does, you want to be in that, I think.
Yeah, you want to be in that stock. I mean, I noticed that, I think it was at Tiger Resources, I noticed the GGP chairman was appointed to the board of them, and that went in a bit of a bender for a couple of days, but I think it's since dropped off. But a bit interesting to see where it goes, or whether he just says that enough's enough, and I'm going to my island in the Caribbean, and I'll see you in the next life. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I think Gervais is still fairly. He's still got plenty more years under his belt, I think he may take a year out, but I'm sure that the lure of the lure of discovering prospects like this and developing greater value, shareholder value. It's also the process as well, the discovery, you know, actually getting on the site and you know, finding out what lies under the ground, modeling the resource, the asset, and then of course all the way through to developing a full blown mine. And you know, that must be, it's a great achievement, you know, it really is. And I think you know, that must deliver a natural high whilst you're undergoing the process. So very hard to turn away from that. And of course, you know, I mentioned ECR just now, but ECR Minerals are, you know, we hope they are at almost at the stage that GGP were at with Creswick and Baileyston. So
it's a very interesting area, that Ballarat Goldfields area, because obviously Power and Red Rock are in the mix as well. In fact, I think yesterday there was a presentation come out from Pow, and there was a map in there that just shows the, you know, the whole area is dominated basically by ECR, Pow, and Red Rock. And one thing's going to trigger it off. You know, obviously there's rumours of a potential, well, that's not rumours, Craig's mentioned it in interviews, you know, there's interested parties in Creswick. You know, if they get involved, what effect will that have in the holdings round about? You know, if it's a major that comes in and joint ventures with ECR, it could trigger off a quite interesting sequence of events in that area. So it could.
Indeed. Well, of course, with Baylisten, the Black Cat prospect, Newmont Mining have applied for a license immediately to the north of the Black Cat prospect. And Baylisten, of course, is in the northwest of Victoria. The northeast of Victoria. ECR have got their operational hub at Bendigo, which is more or less in the centre. And, of course, they bought their new diamond drilling rig, which is currently on route to Baylisten. But there's also interest in Baylisten too from several majors who will be conducting site visits, I believe, in the coming weeks.
Yeah.
And of course, then down the road, you've got the Fosterville mine, which Craig has said Fosterville is literally printing money. It's the most profitable mine in Australia, or the most profitable gold mine in Australia, if not the world, because it's literally it just comes out of the ground, bought by Kirkland Lake Gold, I think, back in 2015. And, of course, the Kirkland Lake share price has exploded some 2,200%, made millionaires of several of its shareholders, and it just continues to roll. So, but there's other history in that area too. You've got the Baylisten Open Cut Mine, which was operated by the Perseverance Corporation in the 90s, and a raft of other prospects across there. And then, of course, we come to Creswick, where the interest is, and there are conversations taking place with several interested parties. In regard to a joint venture, but also below that you have the next license area is called Outer Ballarat, which is around the which circles around the Ballarat gold mine, and you've got a geological anomaly called the Demix Main Shell that runs through from Creswick through Outer Ballarat and through Ballarat, and also into the license area that's owned below that by Power Metal, the Red Rock Australia. I know ECR and Power Metal have applied for the Outer Ballarat license. So what will happen there? Of course, we don't know. But the outcome there will be fascinating.
Yeah, the interesting thing about that competing application is that it was placed into moratorium. Obviously, I know these mineral mapping systems inside out in Australia. Too many hours spent looking at them. And usually when someone's placed it in a moratorium, it's because the company that had it has either went bust, which is not the case, or they've just not met spend requirements or something that they were supposed to do with that area. So to me, it looks as if the Lions Gold Corp, but I can't remember the name of the Australian PTY company that holds the Ballarat mine, they've obviously defaulted in some way. This is my opinion. I can't prove it. And they were forced to let that land go. Now, they've reapplied for it. I can't see them getting it.
No.
Again, this is all my opinion. So we're down to three applicants now. So you've got ECR, you've got POW, and there's another PTY company that's actually a subsidiary of Navarre Minerals. Who are quite a big company. So I don't actually know how it'll pan out. Whoever gets it, it's going to be really interesting for the area. And I was actually surprised there wasn't more than four. And I don't know why, south weren't, and you'd think they'd be all over like a rash as well, but no, they weren't. So
possibly the majors are looking at this on the basis that, well, if either POW or ECR win the application, then they'll more than likely JV with them anyway. So let those guys do the work, and then we'll come in and sort the JV on the enlarged license area. I think either way, that's what the majors often like to do. They've got enough going on with their major assets. So let the little guys actually take care of do the hard yards, get the license, get it across the line, get the approvals, get everything in place, and then in comes the JV, and boom, it's an oven ready, if that's the right term. Perhaps it's not such a popular term to use nowadays, given the Brexit scenario, but it's an oven ready proposition.
Yeah, and just come back to the Newmont license you talked about as well, northwest of Baylisten. Well, it's adjacent as well. That's Newmont's only license in Victoria. which is quite surprising as well.
Yeah,
and that's the sole license, and it's a big chunk. It's about 400 or 500 square kilometers. So, yeah, it's a lot of interesting stuff going on in that area, and obviously ECR POW / Red Rock are positioned well, and it'll be really interesting to see how it pans out in 2021.
So certainly that's my focus for 2021. You know, I'm a shareholders in these companies, so looking forward to it.
Yeah, and there's obviously there's lots of gold opportunities in Australia as well. There's a lot of London interest. Obviously, you've got Panther Metals that are being pretty active in Northern Territory and now Western Australia. Thor that seems to be picking up some licenses in Pilbara as well.
Yep.
Rockfire. You've got Cobra Resources. I'm trying to think if I missed any other ones out.
Yeah, there's certainly a few out there. I know Panther. You know, Darren Hazelwood, of course, has been they've been expanding their footprint over there. They're just south of Darwin, aren't they? With the two key licenses, but there's a more recent application that I think has expanded their footprint there. So yeah. Panther, you know, that I think Panther could be the next POW. You know, they're very much, they've got this broad spread of licenses, of course, big operation in Canada, huge footprint in Canada, but of course, very remote, very hard to get to. And, with inclement weather at this time of year, I think there are some challenges in getting to work on the sites. But Panther also have a great future.
Yeah, I actually spoke to Darren the other day, and I mean, I was surprised as well. He actually said that it's quite easy to drill in the winter. It's actually better to drill in the winter in Canada and explore during the summer months. So that was a new one in me, but I'll take his word for it. And
wasn't it because everything's frozen and it's easy to drive or something? Mm. Yeah,
yeah. It's I think the benefit from logging Big Bear and Dotted Lake as well. So I think there's reasonable. You know, there's reasonable access, you know, going through the licenses, but obviously, or the claims, but obviously to get to the whatever location you want to drill at might then be a challenge. But it was interesting that he said that they can drill in winter, which I didn't expect was possible at all, especially in Canada.
Well, I know Power Metal with the Victoria Silver Peak project, they had difficulties getting on site there, didn't they? So they had to, I think they were unable to get the main rig to the site, so they took some smaller equipment up there. They're able to get that through and commence the drilling. I think it's, I get the impression it's a slightly flatter lake that's, dotted with lakes as the name would imply, and so I can imagine probably in the summer it could be boggy and peaty and difficult to work on, but being frozen in the winter, it probably is easy to get stuff out there. But you just hope there isn't a sudden thaw.
Yeah,
lose your drill rigs.
that's right. Yeah.
So what do you think? I mean, I'll just throw this in. Obviously Australia, you know, every bit of ground, especially in Victoria and Western Australia, to be honest, as well as, you know, anything that's decent is getting picked up. I mean, the sort of last unexplored sort of continent, well, I'm not saying unexplored, but underexplored would probably be Africa.
Yeah.
Not just for precious metals, but for base metals as well. I mean, I think to satisfy this, this green revolution and the electrification and everything, I think there's going to have to be a huge amount of activity in Africa, regardless of the political situation or, you know, what state the countries are in. I think money talks and commodities talk, and I think there'll be a lot of activity in the next 10, 15 years in some countries we've probably never heard of, because there's definite opportunities out there in Africa.
Well, I think Africa is well explored, but it's such a vast continent. Such a huge area that it's so fertile for minerals at every level. And I mean, you know, Botswana, of course, we've spoken a lot recently, Mark. We covered companies like Kavango Resources that have this KSZ project in Botswana, and you know, this is a huge. I think what they've done is really clever in terms of comparing once you've got the modeling, once you've got the data, you can actually start to compare the shape and the size of the asset to other mines, other operating mines that are maybe being operated. And of course, with the Kalahari Sutures and the KSZ in the southwest, in the Katvel Craton, and you know, Kavango is, we've seen since shares totally start to appreciate, but it's still compared to many on a very tiny market cap. But if this goes, it could be absolutely huge. You know, if the asset is proved up, then of course it's the mine's going to be set up, so there'll be no doubt a joint venture or farming agreement with one of the majors, and away we go. And I think that's the exciting thing. There are so many small mining companies that will be at this stage at some point during 2021. Mm. This is when share prices really do become 10 or 20 baggers. And that's what I find exciting about next year. Yeah. But Africa, no, I agree. I think Africa, there are still, there are a lot of assets that have not been untouched, but they've been explored previously and then just left because of a deterioration in the geopolitical, in the political situation, sort of access is difficult.
I guess the problem with Africa is you take somewhere like Botswana, it's a good country, you know, it's got a very good government and good infrastructure, but a lot of the African countries, they don't, do they? That's the problem, I think, that exploration companies may find with them. But, you know, time will change, I suppose.
Yeah, well, a stranded asset doesn't become a stranded asset once the commodity cycle is booming. You know, all these assets are maybe sitting there, maybe 1 million ounces of gold, and it's, you know, it's 200 kilometers from the nearest road. Nobody's interested in it when it's $1,000 an ounce, but when gold's maybe going to $5,000 an ounce, all of a sudden that stranded asset's very attractive. So I think there'll be a lot of these sort of opportunities getting passed about the desks of many TSX and ASX and indeed the LSE companies as well.
I agree, Kenny, and I think also, you know, even in the countries where you have an unstable political backdrop, and possibly military action or civil war, even assets in those countries, it would probably warrant the hiring of a security company to take care of the security and to protect the workers on the mine. So even those assets could come into play. And then, of course, you know, as we've said, you do have the more stable regimes like Uganda, for example. You've got this huge graphite asset there owned by Blenkow Resources, the Orem Cross Graphite Project, which is a whisker away from getting its maiden JORC resource. Africa's going to be huge also in 2021. I'm sure of it.
Okay. Oh, watch this space then. Before we... talks a lot about mining, which is great because we're all into mining. I hope that 2021 is fantastic for that space. But I think esports is also just moving completely away from something completely different. But technology, you know, if we're talking about the next sort of big thing in tech, I feel it's esports. But from what I can understand, there's not really a lot listed, is there? There's not really a lot of investment opportunities to get into that space. The only ones I can think of are like Blue Star Capital, and also is it Guild that recently listed? There's not many investment opportunities out there, but hopefully that'll change because I really think that that space is going to be massive. But I don't know what you guys think of that.
Well, of course we've got Gfinity as well.
Gfinity, which is don't know that.
That's the Mlisted company. Gfinity own the esports forum in Fulham in London, but I think we've spoken about this before, Mark. You know, you'll see youngsters sitting watching videos of other people playing games, and you know, this is an alien concept to me, but gaming, as we said earlier, it's absolutely huge, and I think Gfinity have really started to blaze a trail in this area. I know the CEO, the Clark, he's really turned the company around. I mentioned BidStack, of course, the the company was seeking to expand its revenue streams early this year, and launched an advertising platform along with Vanartis and Bidstack across its various various platforms. Now, these are platforms that include the Abu Dhabi Motor Racing School, and this is where you see the likes of Lewis Hamilton and the other Formula One drivers actually competing on virtual territory. You've got esports cricket, esports football, tennis, you name it. It's all there. Mm-hmm. So from a standing start, they generated £200,000 worth of advertising revenue in the first month, you know, which is pretty impressive. And that was revenue that simply hadn't existed beforehand. And I think it's going to contribute something like $1.5-2 million to the company's bottom line this year. And I think they've said they said in a recent update, in fact, might even have been today, that they are sort of on track for their first maiden profit in the current year, which is quite a step forward. It's such a huge marketplace, and I think, you know, I don't play computer games; they don't interest me one iota. But I know a lot of people who do. My son and his friends, they're all into it. You know, they spend hours on these things, it's only really through him that looking at the setup that he's got, and also these guys will invest tens of thousands in the equipment to play these driving games. And these are games where you go to an arcade and you'll sit in a motorsports game, and you'll get the sensation of driving the car and hitting the brakes, and it'll rock to and fro, and you're absolutely immersed in this thing, and it's all VR. It's incredible.
Yeah, I think there'll be a lot more esports companies coming to market probably in the next couple of years, Mark. I think a lot of the companies are still private just now and just getting everything set up, and a lot of them are franchises, and they're building their sort of brand, and they're getting teams together to compete. So I think a lot of these will come to market in the next 18 months, and you'll probably find, if there's any shells in aim, I wouldn't be surprised if we see a few esports companies getting reversed in over the next couple of years. That would be my thoughts. But now, there's not a lot out there, as Alan said. There's only about three companies, I believe, in London that you can actually get access to esports investments.
Yeah, I know Gfinity are expanding exponentially. I've just found a list of the partnerships they've got. So the Abu Dhabi Motorsports League, the V10R League, which is sponsored by Williams and Ford. You can get that on BT Sport, ESPN, and also Stars Play Arabia. There's racinggames.gg, which is the motorsports website run by Gfinity. You've got online TV player, tournament builder for Xbox One, and then the games you've got the eCricket Challenge, ePremier League, BT Sport Partnership, agreement with Formula One, and so they're literally touching every element of gaming. And I think back in about a month ago, the shares popped up briefly on the day. There were rumours that Harry Redknapp himself had taken a £300,000 spread bet on the price moving higher, so that caused the price to pop up for a day. That's right. Gfinity also launched the Cadbury Heroes Parents League, which basically will see one gaming influencer playing this game alongside parents, the parent or guardian, and that results in a final at some point. So it's huge.
The advertising opportunities for companies like Red Bull and Coke, Pepsi, Nike. It's a completely new stream for them. So and obviously you get the merchandise side of it as well. That's huge as well. It's like supporting your local football team. You go and buy the top. Well, all these guys are now buying, Guild. For instance, I've seen quite a few Guild, hoodies and caps and various different things to wear. So there's definitely a lot of money to be made. I was thinking it's going to be hard, but we'll put you both in the spot. One stock for next year. Let's finish off with a stock from each of us that you think's going to bag. You don't need to say why. You can just give a brief overview, and hopefully we don't pick the same one. Who wants to go first, Mark or Alan? I'll go last.
Oh, right. So multi-bag from this point. That's really hard to.
Yeah.
I mean, I've already spoken about ECR Minerals, but I've got great hopes for ECR. But that's already en route, if you like. But I actually think Bidstack have reached a turning point now, and Bidstack, they still have a very, very lowly market cap. I think around 28 million. Myriad, after they listed in the US, their share, they had a similar valuation, jumped to 110 million. With a dual listing. And I think a lot of technology and small pharma companies will choose a dual list next year. Wouldn't be surprised if Bidstack do the same, but even if they don't, I think the prospects now, they're starting to generate decent money from gaming. I think they've got a huge year ahead of them. So that's my pick for 2021.
Okay.
All right. Mark?
Well, I mean, I was going to say Power, but it's too obvious, I think. So I won't pick that, but I've got a toss-up of two. So let's have a think. I think I know what you might say, Kenny. So do I take it? Do I snatch it from you? Now, tell you what, I'm going to go Conroy Gold. Yeah, I think Conroy Gold. They were obviously supposed to get a joint venture. I mean, I think it's pretty much, you know, it's there from what we're sort of seeing, especially from Anglo-Asian, but it's just not, you know, there's no piece of paper that says it's all signed, sealed and delivered. But I would hope that sort of early next year that does come through. And with the joint venture there on the Conroy Gold, I think I could see that bagging at least once or twice.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, it's what's the market cap? 11 million, yeah. So it's still pretty cheap. Yeah, you can take that up one or two times for sure. I'm going to say Conroy, yeah.
All right, well, I'm going to go for one that everybody probably hates, but I just like to go for something a bit left field, so I'm going to go for Red Rock Resources.
Yeah, I thought you would.
Red Rock?
Yeah.
Red Rock,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just simply because it's Andrew Bell. He's been there since, you know, people have been in caves. He's been there a long, long time, and he's my mate. People either like him or they hate him. But the market cap's only 7 million quid.
Yeah.
They've got the Kenya asset that once they get up to a JORC 2012 standard. Now, at the moment, it's at JORC 2005 standard, so I'm thinking it's probably just a paperwork exercise. Couple of months, let's say, whatever. Once they get that up to JORC 2012 standard, then they've got a 1.2 million ounce resource with a mixture of measured, indicated, and inferred. They've also got a tailings project, which could come online potentially pretty quickly. The market assigns that zero value at the moment. They've got assets in the DRC, which is a bit cloudy and it's probably needing clarification, but I'm sure the way the license situation works over there, it's probably in the next couple of months we'll get a better picture. Obviously, they've got the joint venture in Australia, Power Metal Resources. And the dark horse in their portfolio, obviously they've got the Jupiter Mines shares, which gives them a dividend every year, and I think it's probably worth a couple of million quid on its own. They also have this iron ore asset via Jupiter Mines that the Jupiter are looking to IPO at the moment. And if that goes ahead, I mean, that'll be huge for Red Rock as well, because Red Rock have got the royalty on it. And I think at the moment it's like 2.25%. And I think there's some pre-existing royalty deals already signed. So I need to do a bit of digging in that, because there's a lot of upside from that as well. So I just think that there's four or five projects in there that's got so much upside. And because obviously Andrew's been there for a while, it probably stops some people investing, but eventually value will out. And I think that's that could quite easily go to 100 million. It's been at 100 million before, back in 2009, 2010. It was there in a flash. So I don't see any reason, given the right circumstances, that it could do that again. And people will probably say, you're absolute talking crap, Kenny. And that's fine. And I get it and I understand it. But sometimes you just got to make your mark in the sand. And that'll be my mark in the sand for 2021, or one of them. But that's one that I definitely think's got a lot of legs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
a bit long-winded, but there you go.
No, I think it does have, it has potential, definitely. I agree with you. There's a lot going on there.
Should we pick two stocks?
Yeah.
You want to pick another one?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I think I'm... my comments earlier about assets like precious metals and commodities. I'm also backing Cadence Minerals as a play for 2021, given that they're on the verge of getting the agreement with creditors on the Amapa iron ore mine. And once that happens, we've already seen the share price. We saw it explode last year briefly. It popped up to 40p and then back again on the basis of a deal that MacArthur Minerals, one of its investments, had secured in Australia. It was a takeoff agreement with Glencore on the Lake Giles iron ore project. Cadence Minerals has a shareholding there. It also owns 15% of European Metals Holdings, which of course is the Sinovec lithium project on the German-Czech border. It has a joint venture in Yangibana in Australia, which is the Yangibana rare earth project in Western Australia. And all of these projects are coming to fruition. Hastings Technology Metals, who runs the Yangibana iron ore project, has made strides forward this year in terms of bringing the project to market, getting environmental approval to progress with building the mine and so on. And then, of course, we've got the Amapa iron ore project, which is the in northeastern Brazil. It was owned by Anglo American and was valued by them back in 2012 at $600 million. And then, due to the collapse in the iron ore price, it was then sold. And the company Dev, who own the currently own the mine, were in administration, and following a judicial review, Cadence bought the mine out of administration along with Indosino. And once the agreement with the creditors is signed off and agreed and ratified, Cadence will, the escrow monies of $2.5 million will be released to pay the first round of creditors, and Cadence will then own 20% of the Amapa iron ore asset. Once it's producing, they expect to generate $136 million of EBITDA per annum, and given where Cadence are now with market cap, which is pretty lowly, I think it's around 15 to 20 million. That's going to, in my opinion, take the share price probably back to 25, 30p in the first instance, and then beyond. It's actually 21 million as we speak. So, there's no, in my opinion, upside price in the price at all for Amapa potential. So, that's my second one.
All right, it's a company I've been aware of, but never really dug deeply into. So, maybe gave me some to do over Christmas, Alan. Mm. Since I'll be fed up with Christmas. But all right, Mark, moving on, number two for you.
Well, I'm going to go I'll go with my the esports sector, seeing as I do feel it's going places. So let me pick Blue Star because to be honest, I don't know a whole lot about Gfinity, which is what you just mentioned, Alan. I need to look into that. And I think Blue Star, they have, although they're not an esports company, they're obviously investors in that space, and they tend to pick some. It's almost like grassroots, seed capital type investments. I like Derek Liu. I think he's a very dynamic chairman. So Blue Star for me, purely because of their activity in the esports space, market cap of 8 million. So, you know, not very much at all. And yeah, Derek Liu, who we speak to a fair bit, he's very articulate and, yeah, knows what he's talking about. And I think that company's going places. So, yeah, that'll be my second one.
All right. Okay. I'm going for some left field again. I don't know if you've heard of it, Callum Allen even. I was thinking of my son there. Valeura Energy, dual listed, London and Canada. It's a gas play in Turkey. They've got two assets, one is which they're due to get payment for. They've sold it, I think, in Q1. Cut a long story short, the market cap's about 27 million quid at the moment. They have £23 million worth of cash. They're due another 12 or 13 million from the sale of this asset plus royalties, and they still have a massive deep gas play in Turkey as their main asset. And their new strategy is to go out and acquire assets that are needing some money thrown at them. So yeah, it's different and it's unloved. There's not a lot of liquidity. So I'm going for that, just for something left field again.
What's the epic out there?
So it's VLU and
okay.
UK and VLE and the TSX. So, but again, it's like it's off the radar. Nobody's talking about it. You know, very little liquidity, but they've got this massive war chest, and they've got a strategy going forward. So. Yeah, you always like to have a bit of cash in the bank, and they've certainly, once they get their payments in early Q1, the cash will exceed the market cap by far. Mm. So there's plenty of examples of that out there on the market at the moment as well. So it's not like a lone ranger out there. There's a lot of companies that have got cash in excess of their market cap, which is crazy. But
yeah,
COVID's just brought these situations along. So they have. So there we go.
Okay. Done. Okay.
Cool.
Great.
Okay.
Perfect. Well, let's see. We'll catch up again in the new year, and we'll see what's going on, won't we? I'm sure. I guess thank you very much, Alan, and happy Christmas from the Market Musings team. And we'll speak soon.
Thank you, guys. Well, Merry Christmas and a peaceful and prosperous New Year to us all.
Yep. Same to yourself, Alan. Have a good one.
Thanks, Kenny. You too, mate.
Yes. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Tune in next time.